Welcome back, everybody. We're diving deep today into a pretty intense chapter of King David's story.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely intense.
His victory over Absalom.
His son.
Yeah, his son, who led a rebellion against him.
Oh, it's rough.
It is. The source material that we're using today is a lecture by Dr. Chisholm on the books of 1 and 2 Samuel.
Yes.
Specifically chapters 18 through 20. And what I found really interesting about this section is that David is simultaneously experiencing triumph and utter despair.
Yeah. Like, how does that even work?
Well, that's what we're going to get into today, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Begs the question, what can this story teach us about leadership, about justice, and also about the consequences of our actions?
Oh, absolutely. It really makes you think about how your actions can have a ripple effect. Like, even when you're at the top of your game, life can still throw you a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's especially true for leaders.
Yeah.
You know, their personal life and their political life often get tangled up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mess.
Yeah.
And David's story is, like, the perfect example of that.
Okay, so let's set the stage here.
Okay.
Absalom, David's son, has launched this full-blown rebellion.
Right.
He even manages to drive David out of Jerusalem.
Just temporarily, but still.
For a time being, yeah.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting is that even while David is strategizing his counterattack, he's clearly very conflicted.
Oh, yeah. Totally torn.
He says to his commanders, "Be gentle with the young man Absalom for my sake."
It's like he's trying to separate the son that he loves from this, you know, dangerous rebel who's trying to usurp his throne.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
It is.
It's like, what do you do in that situation, you know? As a king, he's got to put down this rebellion.
Yeah.
He's got to protect his kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But as a dad, you know, his heart is breaking for his son.
Right.
Even though his son's trying to take everything from him.
Yeah.
I mean, you really feel that tension in the text.
Yeah. Okay. So then we get to the battle.
Uh-huh.
And Absalom meets his end.
Yeah.
Kind of ironically.
Yeah. A little bit ironic.
His famous long hair.
I know, right?
Gets tangled in an oak tree.
While he's riding, right?
While he's riding.
And he gets stuck.
Leaving him vulnerable.
Talk about bad luck.
Then, you know, most people would probably just look at that and think, oh, that was just bad luck. But Dr. Chisholm pointed out that this image of Absalom suspended between heaven and earth might actually be symbolic.
Oh, I love that. I thought that was such a great point.
Yeah.
It's like he's reaching for power. He's reaching for the throne.
Mm.
But ultimately, you know, that ambition is what leads to his downfall.
Yeah.
You could even say, like, it's divine judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, mete it out.
Right. Like, it's not just some random accident.
Right.
Like, there's, like, meaning baked into this moment.
Total.
And it gets even deeper when you consider the specific verbs that Dr. Chisholm highlighted in his lecture. Both Absalom and Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba, are struck down and killed.
Interesting.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's drawing a connection between David's sin with Bathsheba and what happened to Absalom?
I think so. It's almost as if, like, David's past actions are coming back.
Like, haunting him.
To haunt him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Makes you think, like, can we ever really escape the consequences of our actions?
Right.
Even if we try to, like, bury them.
Ooh, that's a chilling thought.
It is, right?
Yeah. Speaking of consequences, David's reaction to Absalom's death is just gut-wrenching.
Oh, I know.
He completely collapses. He's crying out, "Oh, my son, Absalom, my son, Absalom, if only I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son."
It's so raw.
It is.
Like, the grief is just pouring out of him.
He says, "Absalom, and my son." Like, over and over and over again.
And it's even more poignant when you contrast that with what's going on around him.
The army's celebrating their victory.
Yeah.
And he's just consumed by grief. Yeah. He can't even share in their joy.
Yeah.
It just shows you the heavy price of leadership, you know, even when you win.
And then Joab, David's top general, gives him this super harsh rebuke.
Oh, yeah.
Basically accuses David of loving those who hated him.
Meaning Absalom, of course.
Right. Meaning Absalom. And hating those who loved him.
Like the army who had been loyal to him.
Yeah. It's like a slap in the face.
Yeah.
A reality check.
It is. And Joab, you know, he can be a bit of a controversial figure.
Yeah.
But I think in this moment, he is showing that he understands what leadership really means.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about your personal feelings, no matter how justified they might be.
Right.
You have a duty to the people who rely on you.
Yeah.
To those who are willing to put their lives on the line for you.
Yeah.
It's a powerful reminder that sometimes leadership means making tough choices.
Yeah.
Choices that might not feel good.
Mm, but are necessary for the greater good.
That's a good point. Yep. It makes you wonder, though, is Joab just motivated by the good of the kingdom here?
That's a great question.
Or is there, like, a bit of self-preservation?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Joab is ambitious.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
And he can be ruthless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's very possible that he is worried about his own position. Hmm. Because a king who's consumed by grief,
yeah,
that's not good for anybody.
No.
Especially not for the people who are close to him.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, a weak king is easier to manipulate.
That's true. Okay, so just when you think that David is pulling himself together,
mm-hmm,
the story takes another turn.
It wouldn't be David's story without another turn.
Right.
Right.
The tribes of Israel start debating.
Yeah.
Whether they even want David to come back as their king.
Right. They're torn. They respect David. You know, he's done great things.
Yeah.
But they also supported Absalom.
Yeah.
So what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, it shows just how fragile the situation really is.
Totally. Like this rebellion.
Yeah.
It's shaken everything.
Yeah.
It's not just about, you know, defeating Absalom anymore. It's about rebuilding trust.
Mm-hmm.
Reestablishing authority.
Yeah.
Reunifying a fractured kingdom.
So how does he do that? How does he, like, navigate this tricky situation?
Well, first, he reaches out to the men of Judah,
mm-hmm,
right? He appeals to their shared history,
yeah,
their lineage.
Yeah.
He reminds them that they are family, connected, mm-hmm, by blood, by their past.
Yeah.
It's a really smart move politically, mm-hmm, you know? It plays on their loyalty, their, yeah, sense of kinship.
Yeah. Okay, and then he makes another bold move.
Oh, what's that?
He appoints Amasa as the new commander of the army.
Amasa?
Yeah.
Who's that?
His nephew.
His nephew. Okay. So he's replacing Joab.
Replacing Joab. And knowing Joab,
mm,
I don't see that going over well. I don't either.
Yeah.
It seems like he's intentionally, like, adding fuel to the fire.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a risky move.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like it's just going to create more conflict.
Yeah.
Maybe David is trying to consolidate his power,
mm-hmm,
surround himself with people who thinks are truly loyal.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's something else going on.
Right.
Something we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery.
Yeah.
And that's why I love these deep dives.
Me too. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion.
Yeah. There's always more to uncover.
Always.
Speaking of layers, as David returns to Jerusalem, he encounters a bunch of interesting characters.
Oh, yeah. Like, who?
First, there's Shimei. Remember him?
Shimei.
Yeah. The guy who cursed David as he fled Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. During Absalom's rebellion.
During Absalom's rebellion, yeah.
So what's he doing now?
Now he's back. He's groveling at David's feet, begging for forgiveness.
Wow. A change of heart.
And then there's Mephibosheth.
Mephibosheth.
Yeah.
The grandson of Saul. Right. Who David had shown kindness to.
Yeah.
Wow. So we've got forgiveness and loyalty all mixed up in here. It's a lot.
It is.
So let's start with Shimei. What do you think about David's decision to pardon him?
I think it was a calculated political move.
Really?
I think he's more concerned with consolidating power.
Okay.
Projecting an image of unity than with, like, Shimei's genuine remorse.
So you're saying he prioritized stability.
Yeah.
Over justice.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And then there's Mephibosheth.
Yeah.
He shows up looking all disheveled.
Okay.
He claims he was falsely accused by Ziba, his servant.
Oh, Ziba. Okay.
Yeah. But Ziba says that Mephibosheth betrayed David.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So classic he said situation.
Right. So what does David do?
He decides to split the property between them.
Really?
Doesn't really make a judgment on either man's loyalty.
It's like he's trying to please everybody.
Yeah.
Keep the peace.
Yeah. But it also feels like a cop-out. He's not really getting to the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
Just trying to smooth things over.
Maybe he's tired.
Yeah.
I mean, after everything he's been through.
Yeah.
Maybe he just doesn't have the energy to deal with it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he realizes there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
No clear-cut right or wrong.
Okay. And then just when things seem to be settling down,
uh-oh,
a new threat emerges.
Always a new threat.
Always a new threat. Sheba.
Sheba. Okay.
A troublemaker from the tribe of Benjamin.
So not another son trying to take the throne.
No. This guy's just exploiting the existing tension.
So basically taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
to stir up trouble. It's like the kingdom is just this powder keg waiting to explode.
It is. And of course, Joab.
Oh, Joab. I bet he loves this.
Well, he can't resist getting involved.
Of course not.
Right.
So remind me, what happened with Joab again?
Okay, so he was demoted.
Right.
When Amasa was appointed commander.
Yeah.
So when David sends Amasa to quell the revolt.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Joab sees an opportunity.
Yeah.
So he murders Amasa.
Yikes. Cold-blooded.
Very cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Takes back his position as commander.
Ruthless. Just ruthless.
Yeah. And the narrator doesn't shy away from the details.
No.
No. The description of Amasa's death is pretty graphic.
Wow. It really emphasizes Joab's brutality.
Yeah.
It makes you think, like, does David even know what kind of man he has leading his army?
That's a really good question. And that's one that we'll have to explore further in the next part of our deep dive.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
This is GC.
It is.
I love it.
Me too. So we left off with Joab back in power.
Yeah.
Having gotten rid of his rival.
In a pretty brutal way.
In a very brutal way. And David, even though Absalom's rebellion's been crushed, there's still so much instability, you know, swirling around him. What I thought was really interesting in this part of the lecture was how Dr. Chisholm connected all of this back to the story of Tamar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like he's saying that what happened with Absalom is tied to David's past.
Right. And specifically his failure to act when his daughter Tamar was raped by Amnon.
Her half-brother.
Yeah, her half-brother.
It's just awful.
It is. And he was angry about it, but he didn't, like, actually pursue any justice for her.
No. And the text really emphasizes her pain. Like, it talks about her weeping, crying out. It's just, she's completely devastated.
Yeah. And Dr. Chisholm suggests that David's grief over Absalom could be seen as, like, a form of poetic justice.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah. He's now experiencing the same kind of profound pain that he allowed his daughter to endure.
It really makes you think about, like, the ripple effects of our actions, you know, especially for those in positions of power.
Yeah.
Like David's inaction in Tamar's case had these devastating consequences for her. And now, years later, he's facing a similar anguish.
Yeah, it's like his past choices are catching up to him, even if it's in this unexpected way. Do you think he sees the connection?
Hmm. That's a good question. Dr. Chisholm didn't really address that directly. But the way these two stories are placed next to each other, it's pretty compelling.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, is David capable of learning from his mistakes? Or is he just, like, destined to repeat these patterns? And speaking of patterns, let's talk about Joab.
Oh, Joab. Yeah. He's something else. So ambitious and ruthless.
Yeah. He's constantly operating in this, like, morally gray area.
Right. But you got to admit, he is loyal to David.
He is.
Often he's the one who pushes David to, you know, take action.
Yeah.
To be strong, even when it's tough.
Yeah. But he's also self-serving and willing to use violence to get what he wants.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, the way he took out Amasa was cold-blooded, even if they were rivals.
Yeah. That's what makes him so interesting, though, right? This mix of loyalty and ambition.
Yeah.
Serving the king, but also serving himself. Do you think David knew about all of Joab's methods?
I don't think he could have been totally oblivious to it, but maybe he just turned a blind eye because Joab was effective.
Right. Like, as long as Joab gets the job done.
Yeah. It's that the ends justify the means kind of thinking.
Which can be pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder, did David actually lose control? Like, did he become a prisoner of the violence that, you know, he started?
That's a really good point. It's like the violence he set in motion with Bathsheba and Uriah just... it has a life of its own now. You know, it makes the whole story feel very tragic. Like, even good intentions can lead to disaster.
Totally. There's this sense of, like, inevitability, that fate is playing a role in David's downfall. And it really makes you think about power. Can it be used for good? Or does it always lead to corruption, to compromising your values just to stay in control?
It's a lot to think about. But that's what this story makes us do, right? We have David, this flawed but very human king, dealing with the consequences of his choices. We have Joab pulling strings, manipulating everything. And all this political intrigue, it's a lot.
It is. And what makes it even more relevant is that these themes are just as powerful today as they were back then. We still struggle with these same questions about leadership, power, morality.
Totally. Before we move on, there's one detail I wanted to go back to. The story about Absalom's monument. The one he built because he thought he wouldn't have any sons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's such a small thing. But Dr. Chisholm pointed out how important it is. So ironic. Because he actually had three sons.
Right. Total vanity project. But as Dr. Chisholm said, it becomes a symbol of how fleeting all of that is. You know, Absalom's ambition destroyed him, and now the monument just reminds everyone of his failure. It really shows the difference between a true legacy, one that's built on service, and just, like, empty ambition.
It's like Absalom's monument foreshadows the problems David will have with his own legacy, you know?
Yeah.
All his victories, they're all tied to his failures. Greatness mixed with cruelty and compromise, just like Absalom's monument, which just reminds everyone of his ambition. David's legacy will be marked by both good and bad.
It makes you wonder, what will people remember most about him? Will it be his victories, the Psalms, his faith, or the adultery, the violence,
yeah,
how he used power?
That's a big question, and it's one we're still trying to answer today.
And that's what makes this deep dive so fascinating.
Absolutely.
We're not just looking at some old text. We're asking timeless questions about, like, what it means to be human.
And what it means to lead.
Exactly.
And the choices we make, whether they're good or evil.
Right. Okay, so ready to move on to the last part of David's story.
I am, yeah. There's still so much to explore, and I think even more to think about.
Okay, so we've seen David face rebellion and tragedy, and he's made some tough choices trying to hold on to power.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy.
Not at all. And, you know, he's back in Jerusalem, but his kingdom's still pretty messed up. What really stood out to me in this last part of the lecture was how Dr. Chisholm highlighted this tiny detail that hints at some big problems later on.
You mean, like, the thing with Adoniram being put in charge of forced labor?
Yeah, exactly.
Seemed kind of minor at first.
It did.
But Dr. Chisholm makes a good case that it shows this worrying trend in David's reign.
Yeah, like, on the surface, it might not seem like a huge deal.
Right.
But it goes against, like, a basic principle of kingship.
That the king isn't supposed to be above the people.
Exactly.
Huh.
This whole idea of forced labor really struck me as this, like, crack in the foundation.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like, it could get wider and the whole thing could just crumble.
And what's fascinating is how Dr. Chisholm linked this back to the kingdom eventually splitting apart.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Solomon, David's successor, he expands this system of forced labor.
And that causes a lot of resentment, right?
A lot. And then Rehoboam, Solomon's son, he just completely mishandles the whole thing.
Ignores all the advice he's given.
Doesn't listen. And bam, open revolt. The kingdom splits in two.
So that tiny detail about Adoniram, it's not just some random historical fact.
No, it's like this seed of discontent that's planted during David's reign.
And it grows and grows until it explodes later on. Wow.
It makes you wonder, did David even realize what he was doing?
Or was he so focused on holding on to power that he missed the big picture?
It's a good question. And it makes me think about how we do the same thing sometimes in our own lives.
We overlook the little things that could become big problems later.
Exactly. It's easy to get caught up in the big drama and miss the warning signs. So we've covered David's victories, his failures, his good moments, and his, well, less good moments.
He's a complicated guy.
He is. What are some of the biggest takeaways for you from this deep dive?
I think one of the most important things is how crucial self-awareness is. For everyone, but especially leaders, David shows us that even people with good intentions can make mistakes. They can let their emotions cloud their judgment and not see what their actions might cause.
Yeah, and those consequences can last a long time.
A long time. It reminds us that we need to be checking ourselves, you know, asking, what am I doing? Am I making things better or worse?
Definitely. And David's story also shows how important it is to listen to people who challenge us, even when it's hard.
Like Joab telling David straight up how it is, or those advisors trying to warn Rehoboam.
Yeah, sometimes the things we least want to hear are the things we need to hear the most.
Absolutely. Building on that, I think David's story shows us that leadership isn't just about being in charge. It's about using your influence to make the world better, to be more just, more compassionate. Even when you win, the work isn't over. There's always more to do, always more healing needed.
Yeah, that's a powerful thought. We've gone through this incredible journey with David, seen his rise to power, his triumphs, his really awful mistakes, and the legacy he leaves behind. It's a story that still speaks to us today about what it means to be human, about the difficulties of leadership and how the choices we make can have a huge impact. But I think the real question this deep dive asks is, what story are we writing with our own lives? What choices are we making? And how will they affect the world around us? I hope that's something you keep thinking about.
Beautifully said. And I always encourage people to go back to the source material themselves. Read the story of David again. Find your own meaning in it. There's always more to discover and think about in these timeless stories that have shaped our world. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.